Mike and the Pros.
And the local community.
The rage in local radio.
Find out what's going on locally.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time now for the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. Now, here's your host,
Bill Frank.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. And if you want to call in, our number is 289-1520. That's 805-289-1520. I interview thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. My next guest is an adjunct professor from New York University who strongly believes that China has more to share with the U.S. than just inexpensive products. We'll discuss her findings from her book, What the U.S. Can Learn from China. Ann Lee focuses on issues of global economics and finance and is writing a book on the U.S.-China relations. She's a former investment banker and hedge fund partner. She's a frequent media commentator on economic issues, in addition to television and radio appearances on Bloomberg, ABC, CBS, CNN, and NPR. Her op-eds have appeared in such publications as The Financial Times, The Wall Street Journal, Newsweek, Business Week, Forbes, and Worth magazines. She's been quoted in hundreds of publications, has been invited to speak at numerous industry events. As I said, she's an adjunct professor at New York University. While she was teaching at Peking University, she acted as an economic advisor to the Chinese official government, as well as several large Chinese asset management firms. She was educated here in California at UC Berkeley. She also went to Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School of International Affairs and the Harvard Business School. Joining us from the greater New York area, hi, Anne, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, thanks.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest here on the Bill Frank Show. And I want to talk about this whole relationship between the United States and China. And I've got a long setup for this next question, so bear with me here. But it starts back in 2011 with President Barack Obama and his State of the Union speech. In his State of the Union speech, he warned that our country is facing a new, what he called Sputnik moment, that China appears to be on the same trajectory as the United States with exponential improvements in wages, working conditions, and global influence. China is now the number two economy in the world. We know that. And it's predicted that the Chinese economy could overtake the U.S. economy as early as the year 2025. We've heard all of that rhetoric from the media. But here's something that we don't hear. The U.S. median household income is $51,900. The Chinese median household income is only $8,794. And if you think back to the 1980s, we were hearing this same type of rhetoric about the Japanese. They were then the number two economy at the time. They had a much higher median household income than China does, but still lagging behind the United States. They were aggressive free market capitalists, just like the Chinese. So throughout the centuries, China really has been coming into its own as an emerging economy. Why now? Why is it all of a sudden surfaced as the economy that we all fear and dread?
Well, China is different than Japan in a couple different ways, and I explain this in my book. One, China is a continental-sized country like the U.S., so in terms of scale, the issues that in terms of competitiveness are going to be slightly different than Japan. Secondly, when Japan was rising, this was before the internet days, and so there was no outsourcing, no offshoring. They were just basically exporting to the world. Today, China's relationship with the world is different. China's more of a hub where a lot of companies outsource and offshore various operations to China, and as we hear about news of Apple and others, we realize that a lot of our products that we import into the U.S. Basically have pieces coming from multiple countries. And so the fate of China actually matters much more to the U.S. and the rest of the world than when Japan was rising, because all our economies are so intricately tied together because of the supply chain network.
I see. And I want to come back and follow up on that question. You were talking about how interdependent the world is. You were talking about how China had been a major exporter. One very interesting point in the news recently, and it's just very recent news, China's balance of trade ran at a deficit of $35 billion in February. That was arguably the first time in recorded history in China. What is that telling us about this shift in China? Is China making that transition from an export manufacturing economy only to becoming a consumer nation as well?
Oh, absolutely. anyone that goes to visit China can see that consumerism is rampant there. It's growing very rapidly at probably 10% growth rate every year. And when its export markets, such as Europe and the U.S., have dropped off significantly, it is not surprising that they're starting to import more than they export. And this is good news for countries like the U.S. if they want to increase their exports to China.
Well, I certainly view it as good news, Ann, but then it brings up the bigger question. Can China then control inflation as the economy starts to become more of a consumer-based economy?
Well, the central bank in China has many levers for controlling inflation, and they have demonstrated that they tend to be looking forward and ahead of the curve in a lot of their economic issues, such as when the real estate market seemed to be getting frothy. The Chinese government basically stepped in to put the brakes on it. They didn't wait for the real estate to actually go into a full-blown bubble and burst. They basically started to say, we're going to raise interest rates, you can't buy third homes, and all sorts of other measures to try to cool the real estate property prices. So in terms of inflation, I think that they can also hike interest rates, they can increase reserve requirements at their banks. So they have a number of things that they can do, and I'm certain that they will find a way to make sure that inflation doesn't get out of control.
My guest is Ann Lee, author of the book, What the U.S. Can Learn from China, An Open-Minded Guide to Treating Our Greatest Competitor as Our Greatest Teacher. So in your book, Ann, you really prescribe 10 things that the U.S. can learn from China. I'm just going to run through them real quickly, and then I want to come back and talk about several of them in depth. First is invest in education. Second is introduce Confucian values and work ethics into our everyday lives. Make aspiring politicians pass a competency test and require track records of helping the public unselfishly. Incorporate that special economic zone model that the Chinese have. Encourage capitalism in the real economy instead of the financial markets. Restrict banks to traditional banking activities. Make innovation lucrative for businesses. Support technology entrepreneurs. Embrace what you call soft power and adopt an attitude of goodwill towards China and other rising economic powers. They seem to make sense. I want to dive into a couple of them, as I said, in depth, if we can, Ann. Starting with number one, invest in education. The United States today ranks 32nd among the industrialized nation in math and science skills. Why and where are we falling behind? What can we do to further our education for our young people?
Yes, I explain in my book that China attacks the education problem from multiple fronts. Just throwing money at the problem is not going to fix it. You've got to get the teachers aligned with parents, with the society. And so in China, they actually have a Teacher Appreciation Day, and they also basically provide free education for people who want to pursue teaching as a career so that they don't graduate with gigantic student loans. They're basically saying, hey, if you want to be a teacher, we respect teachers enough that we want to pick up the costs ourselves. They provide ongoing, continuing education for teachers to make sure that they're staying on top of the rapid changes in the economy. They also create this culture where teachers are super respected, so they're not only paid a lot, but teachers have complete control over their classrooms. My mother actually used to be a teacher there, and she said that the attitude was totally different. There, parents actually beg teachers to punish their kids. That's completely unheard of here in the U.S. And so basically, it's a complete attitude shift supported by the government. And in terms of broader society jumping onto the bandwagon, I suggest in the book, you know, we have all these TV shows that send out the message to young people that education doesn't matter to career success. You know, we always see shows like Jersey Shore or American Idol where you don't need to get a college degree to have a great entertainment career or a career in sports and so forth. And we need to actually have more shows that showcase how exciting it can be to conduct breakthrough scientific research or to be a CEO of a company. So I think that can also encourage more investments in education and in part to the public how important education is for a better, you know, as a ticket to a better life.
My guest is Ann Lee, author of the book, What the U.S. Can Learn from China. And Ann, in your book, one of the other 10 points that you talk about is embracing what you call soft power. What do you mean by that, and how would the United States go about embracing soft power?
Well, the traditional definition of soft power, as written by Joseph Nye, is basically he was arguing to export U.S. culture around the world as a way to influence everyone of American ways and culture and democracy. And we've done that very well. But what I describe in my book as China soft power is that they use they use business deals as a way to create power and influence with countries around the world. So instead of investing in their military the way that the U.S. has been of late, I basically explain how the Chinese will go to different developing countries and cut a deal saying, hey, you know that we need natural resources to build our infrastructure, but we also know that you need help to build infrastructure like schools, like hospitals and airports. And so so why don't we cut a deal where in exchange for your oil or copper, we'll help you build all this infrastructure so that you can get your economy off the ground. And this has happened all over Africa. It has also happened in Latin America. And I suggest that that could be actually a more, a more productive way to develop relationships with countries around the world. So instead of having hundreds of military bases all over the world, it's actually cheaper to just create these business deals where you have a win-win situation.
My guest has been Ann Lee, author of the book, What the U.S. Can Learn from China. And you have probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Absolutely. I've created a website for this book called ProfessorAnnLee.com. So it's Professor ANNLEE.com as one word. They can also find me on the Demos think tank webpage. So that's demos.org, D-E-M-O-S.org, and I'm listed as one of the experts there. And then also they can find my book on Amazon if they type my name or they type the title of my book, What the U.S. Can Learn from China.
That is great. Ann, thank you so much for being my special guest here on the Bill Frank Radio Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Great. Thank you so much.